Hello, have we got anybody else there? Okay, not yet. No one's come on yet. You can hear a little beep. And it's being recorded from this point.
Okay.
Hello, who have we got?
You have John Spinelli and Kathy Spinelli from Columbus, Ohio, Adrian.
Hi, John. How are you?
Pretty good. I just sent you an email about 5 minutes ago with two questions. We just got your late email about sort of refreshing our minds about the call-in procedures. And
okay, I'll look for it in a minute. Let's see, who else have we got on? Who just came on?
Romeo's here.
Romeo, how are you?
Very good, kiddo. How are you?
Good. So you got the information?
Yeah.
I see that. Okay, excellent. Okay, we're waiting. We've got a whole slew of people who are coming in on the call, so we're going to wait until others call in, okay? I've got Steve Navarro here with me. I'll introduce him when it looks like we've got more of a full house.
Hello. Hello, Adrian. It's Bev in Nebraska.
Hi, Bev. How are you?
Oh, getting better. How are you?
Just wonderful. Thanks for calling in.
Good.
Okay, you know the drill. We're going to wait until other callers come in. Hello, who have we got on the line?
Hi, Adrian. This is Ginny Blackwell.
Hi, Ginny. Welcome.
Hi, Adrian.
And this is
who
Craig
else
Powell.
Is there?
This is Craig Powell.
Hi, Craig Powell. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you very much for setting this up.
Well, it's my pleasure. Let's see. Who else just came on the line?
This is Mitch Opalski.
Hi, Mitch. How are you?
Very good. Pardon?
Who else just came in?
Eleanor Matthews.
Eleanor. Eleanor, did you just sign up late? Yes.
Well, I sent an email on Friday. And
okay, I got it.
Reminder.
Yeah.
Thank
yeah,
you.
I've got it. Okay. Thanks.
Where are you?
We're in Paris. Where are you?
Oh, you are?
Of course.
Oh, envious. I'm in Virginia, Washington, D.C.
I'm in New York.
Well, I hope you'll be here soon.
Hey, Ginny, how are you doing? It's Romeo.
Oh, you're kidding. Hey, Romeo. Small world.
I know. I moved to New Hampshire from California.
Oh, that's right. You told me that you did. Very cool.
Yeah.
What did you do that for?
Too many
bucks. I was getting tired of the traffic and the congestion and the high prices of California.
I understand completely.
Now you're looking into the high prices of Paris apartments.
That's okay.
I've been looking at those for a long time. We know. Okay, we're just going to wait a couple more minutes because there are a whole lot more people that are supposed to sign on here, okay?
Sure.
So sit tight. Can everybody hear?
Hear you great.
Yeah, I can hear fine.
Perfect.
Good.
This is a pretty amazing setup, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, and I'm on a VoIP phone.
Oh.
You know, a Vonage phone, so it doesn't cost me anything.
Oh, yeah, you use Vonage, huh?
Yeah. In fact, that's one of my tricks. Hi, who just came on?
Hi, it's Lori Miller.
Hi, Lori Miller.
Welcome. How are you?
Hello, who just signed on?
Hi, Adrian, it's Barb Westfield.
Hi, Barb Westfield. How are you?
I'm good. So guess who bought the chateau?
Who bought the chateau?
The word is it's Pierre Cardin.
You're kidding.
No.
Fabulous. We're going to save that conversation for the very end of the call.
Okay.
The chateau in all suites. Inside information.
Yeah.
Cardin bought it. Oh, my God. I guess I have to write about it this week.
Yeah, I have to get more details. We'll talk later.
Okay, who just signed on?
My name's Laura Sanders. Hello.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Laura Sanders.
Sanders. Okay, Laura, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to give it just a couple more minutes. Is that okay? So we can... hello, who signed on? Hello, who's new there? Hello? Is everybody there?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The important people are here.
Well, good. I hear that, Romeo. I just heard a couple of beeps. Can you hear the beeps when someone signs in?
Yes.
We can.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I heard a couple of beeps, but they didn't give me their names.
But I think you hear the same beep when someone drops off, though.
Possible. Okay, so I tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to go ahead and get started, okay? And we may hear beeps and some other people come in along the way, like just now. Who just came in?
Karen and Al Crumbliss, North
okay,
Carolina.
Hi, how are you, Karen?
Hey, thank you.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and get started. My name's Adrienne Leeds. This is one of a series of conference calls that we've been doing over the past year or so as a benefit of being a French Property Insider subscriber. I want to introduce to you Stephen Navarro, who is president of Paris Home Shares. He is a real estate attorney and a broker, has been since 1977, and he did his first fractional ownership project in June of 2006 called Villa Monceau in the 17th arrondissement. This is how I came to know Steve, because I actually, by chance, went to dinner at this beautiful apartment, and the person who owned her one-month share of that apartment was so thrilled with it that she couldn't stop raving about it, and she introduced me to Steve, and we've been working together ever since. And he actually made a presentation at the San Francisco conference this past July and is in the process of working on some other projects, one of which is called the Jardin Saint-Paul, and it's an apartment on Rue Ferdinand Duval, right off of Rue de Rosier, that we found for him and that he is now in the process of renovating and selling as fractional shares. So I'm going to just introduce Stephen, let him make a brief presentation to you about the fractional ownership solution, and then we're going to open it up for questions. So I'm going to turn it over to Steve.
Thank you, Adrienne. Hello, everybody. I know you're calling from all far parts of the country, or maybe from the world, I don't know. But I'm here in Paris right now with Adrienne, and I just thought I'd tell you a little bit about myself and how I came to work up this concept called fractional ownership. And my wife and I, Suzanne, we live in Denver, Colorado, and as Adrienne mentioned, I've been in real estate since the mid-70s. That wasn't my formal education. I decided that I loved engineering, but after 2 years in the workforce, I decided I loved real estate better. So many years later, after selling real estate and developing partnerships for apartment buildings throughout the Denver area throughout the 80s and early 90s, I then went to law school as my third career to specialize in real estate law. After I became an attorney, I realized, why did I do that? But in any event, real estate's really been the love of my life. And in 2000, we started traveling to France to visit, because we just loved all of France at that time. And we had some friends in Denver that had invited us over. And being in real estate, of course, when we were in Paris, I'm always looking at real estate and saying, gee, wouldn't it be nice to own something here? Well, in 2000, I thought the prices were a little bit ridiculous, even though a dollar would buy $1.22's worth of euros at the time. And everything else seemed relatively inexpensive. We came back in 2001. Prices were going up, and my dollar was
Hello?
And in each subsequent visit, hi, we've got somebody new on the line. Maybe if you can just introduce yourself. Hello?
Hello?
Are you there?
Hello? Hello?
Can you hear us?
I'm not sure who that is, quite frankly. But...
Okay. Hello?
Can everybody else hear me?
Can everybody hear?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Well, anyways, to get to the point, in 2006, we came out to Paris, and I was bound and determined to buy something in Paris before we left. And ultimately, we looked at a lot of different places and found this lovely one, Betterman 17th. And once I bought it, I decided I needed to find some other people to go in with me on, because it was a lot of money for one person. And that, of course, is the gist of any fractional ownership, and I think that is to find people of a like opinion and with like interests to share the expense of owning a home as a second home. Not for us, not so much as a real estate investment rental property, but as a second home to have when we came to visit to Paris. That's kind of how I got into it. It was something I had played with for many years, but I had several other companies that I was running at the time. And finally turned those over to my son so that I could devote all my attention to developing fractional ownerships. So that's a little bit about myself. Now let me tell you a little bit about what fractional ownership is. And it's not a new concept. I think many of you from the United States may have heard about it or even looked into it in different areas in the United States. They first popped up in the resort area, the ski resort areas, usually as quarter ownerships of a very expensive home that might be ski side, for example. And they would be selling one-fourth ownerships in ski resorts in Utah and Colorado. Later, I think there were some in California and Nevada that started developing this concept. However, for European properties, it's a very new concept. Most Europeans aren't familiar with what it is, but what it, you know, it's very simple in its own right, and that is that it's just a group of owners, and it can be as few as two owners or as many as 12 or 13 that go together to jointly own a property for a specific purpose, whether that's as a rental property or as a second home. The benefits of this, I think, are fairly obvious because with the price of real estate going up, particularly for second homes in resort areas like Paris or Hawaii or Florida or any exotic place that there's a high demand for, it becomes a little bit cost prohibitive to pay for that property yourself if you're only going to use it for a fraction of the year. And this is what went through my mind when I thought about buying a place in Paris. And that was, I can only use it for a month a year. What am I going to do with it the other 11 months? And so that's why it makes sense to us, and because it's a second home, it's best utilized, I think, if you can share that cost and overhead with other people who feel the same way. And so that's kind of the genesis of fractional ownership, in my mind anyways. And there are a few people doing it here in Europe, and several developers, including a lot of the big hotels. For example, Ritz-Carlton is doing fractional ownerships in the United States, as well as the Marriott. I think Westin is also doing some. They found it a good way to sell a luxury resort to several owners who cannot use it all the time themselves. But for people who want a high-class lodging experience that they can call their own without the necessary attendant costs of owning that property single-handedly and perhaps having to have to rent it out, whatever the cost. So So having said that, that's a little bit about my concept of fractional ownership and why it makes sense to me, because if I'm only paying 1/12 of the cost, it certainly makes it a lot more affordable for me, and I think for most other people who have gotten into this, because it's a very efficient use of the money that they spend. So I will open this up to questions. Adrian, this is the first time I've ever done this, so just tell me if I do something wrong. But what I might want to do is if you would give me your name and the question, and I'll repeat the question back so that everybody can hear it and make sure that I've understood what I heard, and then I'll give you the best answer I can. So I'll just open up the floor to whoever wants to volunteer first.
This is Al Crumbliss, and my question is, do you have a is there a broker fee on top of the fee we see listed on the website for the St. Paul residents?
Okay. Al Crumbliss, and his question is there a broker fee on top of the price that is shown on the website for my company for the projects that we are developing? And the answer is no. The price that I show is all-inclusive, and I think most developers, when you see a price quoted, that price usually includes just about everything right down to the soup and nuts, except for the ongoing annual expenses, which are, you know, quite varied depending on what company you go with and the type of property and the locale. But all of the brokerage fees, all of the notaire fees, the purchase price,
the tax,
all the property taxes at the time of closing, all of the renovation costs, all of the furniture, those are all added into the overall cost and then divided by 12. And so the price you see is one fixed price that covers everything, right down to the china on the table.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Steve, this is Craig Powell, and I'm also a recovering real estate lawyer.
Okay.
So
then
my
pain, right?
Yeah. My question necessarily addresses the legal structure. I wonder if you could kind of outline for us how it's structured.
Okay. The question, this is from Craig Powell, a recovering real estate attorney himself, and his question is some sort of explanation on the legal structure for owning a fractional ownership. And I'll just make this a caveat that in France, the rules are completely different than they are anywhere else. So what I'm going to address is the legal structure for owning a fractional ownership in France. And it does not have to be this way if the fractional ownership's in the United States or Mexico or Hawaii or any other state. There may be other limitations, but you won't see the type of structure that you see in France. It's very unique to this country. All right, first off, if you want to own property in France, there are the two best ways, in my opinion, and I say this because I'm not a French expert in real estate law or in French taxes, but I have done a fair amount of research, and my opinion is you can either buy the property personally if you're going to own it yourself. There's nothing wrong. The French recognize if you and your wife want to purchase a property to own as a second home, that can be done very simply without a whole lot of legal rigmarole. They don't recognize the concept of joint tenancy, but you can each own what would be called a tenancy in common. If there's more than one set of owners, however, things start to get a little bit complicated for a couple of different reasons. One is it's very expensive if you have several sets of owners and one wants to sell. If their names are directly on the title, it requires a complete treatment just like a sale with the hiring of a notaire, and the fees to do all of this become very, very expensive just to change ownership for one of the owners. So what is typically done is to have the owners own part of a corporation, and then the corporation holds title. And that way the owners can move in and out of ownership within the corporation without having to affect the title itself. Now, in our particular case, and I think the best structure is one that the French have devised themselves, called a Société Civile Immobilier, abbreviated as an SCI. This is a holding company designed specifically for holding of real estate by multiple parties. It is not meant to be a for-profit company, but merely as a holding company to accommodate the multiple individuals that may have an interest in the property. And this is the entity that we use, and a couple other developers also use this, as the preferred method for holding title to the property itself. Now, within that company, and you can consider it just like you would a company in the United States or Canada, there are shares and shareholders. And each person or stockholder's interest is reflected by the number of shares they hold, divided by the number of shares outstanding. In our case, we form an American LLC that holds 99.99% of the shares of the French company, and then all of the owners that want to own the apartment, they own the LLC, which of course controls, by virtue of holding all the stock, it controls the French entity that is the actual legal owner. That's our structure. There are other structures out there. In my opinion, ours provides the best advantages from a state tax standpoint, an income tax standpoint, and a legal standpoint in terms of withstanding scrutiny by the French government, is because we would be a foreign corporation owning real estate in France. All right, so that may have been attorney talking. Please follow up on that question if there's anything you need for me to clarify, because it is a very complex question. And I just met with our CPA a week ago and went through this. He told me that one of the questions I asked he had just researched, and it took him 3 months to get the correct answer. So it is not an easy question to answer in one or two sentences, but I do think that this is the proper method for taking title to property in France for use by several owners. Did that answer your question, Craig?
Yes, and I've done some research myself, not nearly exhaustively like you have, but I come to the same conclusion, Steve. That seems like a very clean, rational way to maintain the greatest amount of flexibility for the American buyers, is to have that.
Yes, and it actually works for any nationality, although I think in Great Britain they have their own peculiar set of rules about owning second homes, but I truly don't know what those are, but I've heard a little bit about it. But I do think for the majority of people in the majority of countries that this is the most flexible way to get in and out and to avoid some of the French tax laws that otherwise could put a burden on some people. Okay, next question. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, would you just repeat the SCI, what stands for?
Yes, SCI stands for Societe. That's S-O-C-I-E-T-E. And Societe in French.
Societe.
Societe, right.
Civile Immobilier.
Yeah. All right, Civile is C-I-V-I-L-E, civil.
Okay.
Like civil. Immobilier is the French word for real estate.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay.
Hey, Steve.
Yes.
This is John Spinelli. I sent Adrian two questions by email, but let me ask one of them now. What's the basic difference, or are there any, between both fractional ownership and so-called timeshares that we know about?
I'm so glad you asked that question, John.
You're welcome, Adrian.
Okay. You will get 20 different answers depending on whether you are a timeshare salesman or a fractional ownership marketer. But here's my take on it, John, and it is a fair question. there are similarities and differences between timeshares and fractional ownerships. The similarities are this, because they're relatively easy to discuss. You have a group of people each sharing the use of one asset, whether it be a boat, a plane, a car, a home, whatever it is. If you have multiple people using and sharing that time, then it is truly time sharing from that standpoint. Where fractional ownership differs from time sharing, as we are all familiar with the concept, the first thing that I want to point out is that fractional ownership is just that. It is ownership of the actual asset. A timeshare week or month, however it may be phrased or spread out, is really simply a right to use that unit or apartment or villa or whatever it is for a specified period of time in eternity. Now, you may get a deed, but it's called a right to use deed. You could never sell that apartment or villa or condominium unit, nor could you get the rest of the owners to come in with you and say, all right, now we got all 52 owners, let's sell this unit on the open market. It's never happened because it cannot happen because the owners don't have the right to do that. In a fractional ownership, all four or all six or all 12 owners could join together and say, the market's going crazy, we want to take advantage of it, let's just put the apartment up for sale. And if, you know, if they agree to that, that can be done, and they can sell the unit outright. Another big difference is that, how can I put this? A lot of the so-called fractional ownerships being developed by the hotel industry are really nothing more than hotel rooms within their complex that are being sold on a permanent basis.
Yeah, it's what it's doing in New York.
Yeah, exactly. Or suites, and they may call them suites or one bedroom. They may be larger than your typical hotel room, but usually these are all located on the premises of the resort developer, whether it be the Ritz-Carlton or the Marriott or the timeshare developer who built this resort on the beach in Hawaii. And as such, you are paying for the overhead to maintain not just your apartment, but all of the amenities that are provided within, and they can be a lot little. But those are things that you need to look at if you're looking at a fractional ownership. How much?
Hello?
Hello?
Did everybody hear that?
Yes.
Are you there?
Back.
Okay. Yeah, I just got some sort of announcement or something. But can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing that one of the differences between fractional ownership and timeshare is the management fee. The management fees in a fractional ownership very closely relate to the actual ownership cost of the unit. In a fractional ownership, there are huge management fees built into the maintenance fees that each owner pays. And I own a couple timeshares, and I wonder why I pay these maintenance fees, because I could stay at any hotel in the city for what I pay in maintenance fees for my unit. So, I wonder how closely those actually align to the real cost. So there are some huge differences that I think are beneficial to the fractional ownership owner that the timeshare owner doesn't see that benefit.
Okay, so just to make clear in my mind that I heard you right, and I sort of suspected this going in, timeshares, you're really buying the use of the space. You're not buying the asset itself. You don't have any claim to the asset itself. Whereas in fractional ownerships, you are a real owner of the asset, and you will enjoy the appreciation, and you will share in any fall depreciation in value. And that whatever it costs to maintain, the costs of this thing are really sort of parceled out on a pretty equal basis among however many people you have as owners.
Exactly. And that's the whole concept, is that, you know, there's a certain pleasure of transparency there. I mean, you see what the actual taxes are, what the actual insurance is. Just like owning your own home, except now instead of paying for it all yourself, you're just dividing it among 11 other owners besides yourself. As far as real estate appreciation, well, I will tell you going in that you're paying a premium over what a simple 1/12 of a piece of property would cost, because you're also benefiting by a lot of renovation, updating, and complete furnishing of the unit.
Right.
But having said that, they track very closely. The increase in values in the area will benefit the owners of fractional ownerships, just like the owners of the apartment if they own them outright. And if the market goes down, they will suffer just like everybody else that owns real estate in that area.
And so,
and the timeshare, I think the only direction I've ever seen is down. So,
we've never purchased any. We have friends that have purchased them. Frankly, I have no interest in purchasing them because, as you, at least in terms of your management fee, there's obviously a big incentive to make a profit off of the folks that you've sort of lured into buying into the operation, because it's hard for them to get out of it. And as you said, do you pay management fees that I guess if you had your druthers, you could you'd rather get out of it, but you're sort of stuck with
it. That's right. I don't really think as a timeshare owner that you have a whole lot of say about the decor of the unit, about leaving your personal belongings there and treating it as though it's your own, or about the overall management of the complex. That's pretty much dictated by the developer. Now, I could be wrong, and it could be that a majority of timeshare owners could opt for a different management company. In a fractional ownership, if you look at some of them, you'll see that you have a lot fewer owners to contend with. So the management is on a much smaller scale in the first instance. You may only be talking about 4 or 6 or 12 owners, and you have the option of whether you want to manage that yourself or hire outside management. But it's a very personal decision that can have a direct effect on what your annual costs will be, but also I think you have much higher degree of control over how the property is run on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask my second question, and I'll shut up for the rest of the time period and let everybody else
That's all right. Go ahead.
Chime
that's
in.
Okay with everybody else. I'll try and make a brief answer. Go ahead.
Oh, well, that's okay. I'll try to make my question brief as well. Is it possible to secure financing, either domestically here in the States or in France, for the original down payment? In other words, example, if I buy into your project and you say, okay, John, by a date certain, you need to come up with $100,000 in U.S. currency. And I say, well, yeah, I can come up with $20,000. Can I get some note or mortgage for the balance of 80% or $80,000 based on the value of the property and or the appreciated value divided on a 1/12 basis, let's say? Was that clear?
Okay, so John's question is, if I want to buy a share, is there a way for me to put a down payment and finance the balance of the cost of purchasing the share? And the answer is, the first answer is it's going to depend on where your share is. If it's in the United States, there is just now coming online a few companies who recognize residence club ownerships and fractional ownerships as legitimate investment real estate that can be used as collateral for a loan. And one of them happens to be in my backyard in Denver. I think it's called First Fractional Funding. I can't tell you anything about them, but I know they're one of maybe one or two lenders in the United States who will even consider lending on a fractional ownership. Once you get to France or anywhere else outside the United States, I would have to say that the concept is so new that the answer is no.
Right. Too risky.
And what my experience has been is that most people, if they need to borrow money, they usually look to other assets that they own to acquire that
the money from there and then use that to acquire this asset.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Thank you.
You're welcome. Next question.
This is Al Crumbless again.
Hi, Al.
Hi. I assume that there's an association or something in France of the owners of all the apartments in this building. Can you tell us a little bit about how that works with relationship to our partial ownership?
Yes. I will speak to Paris because that's what I know best.
Yes.
But I think it works the same throughout France. When you buy an apartment in an apartment building, it is no different than having a condominium in a condominium complex or an apartment in a co-op in New York City. You have a group of owners, all of whom must contend with the maintenance of the common areas and the building structure itself. And they do that, of course, by having too many meetings of too long a length. And they have dues that they budget each year to help cover the expenses of maintaining the insurance for the common areas and the grounds and the utilities, perhaps, if the utilities are included. And that is no different here than it is in the United States. There is what they call a co-propriété. Did I say that right?
Co-propriété. Pretty good.
And they often will hire a syndic, which is just a management company, to manage the building, or sometimes they will manage it themselves. As an owner of an apartment, whether that ownership is among 12 owners jointly or one owner, the fractional ownership development, the apartment, will have the same say in the operation of the building, whether it was one owner or 12. Okay, so there's a percentage ownership of the co-propriétaire that comes with the ownership of the apartment based on the apartment size and how many units are in the building. So, yes, I mean, the fractional ownership owners jointly are represented or can be represented or should be represented at each co-propriétaire meeting because they are one of the owners and they carry a vote just like all the other owners in the building.
Yeah, well, who would do that in this case?
That's a fair question. I mean, usually one of the owners will gladly volunteer to fly over to France, but it helps if you're fluent in French, first off, let me say that, because the meetings are all conducted in French, and there's a lot of legal jargon that goes on, so it is helpful if you have someone that's fluent in French. Our company has people in Paris that will represent the owners at the syndic meetings and relay back to them what was discussed. And usually you get some notification 30 days prior of what's going to be on the agenda and what will be voted on. So those things can be brought to the owner's attention. And if there's something major, usually you have much more than 3 months' notice.
Well, for example, that notification, I mean, who does the society or the organization that manages that building in Paris, who do they contact when they say, okay, there's a meeting or we need to discuss a change in assessment and so on? Who of these 12 owners do they contact or do they contact your company?
Okay. Each developer does it differently and just depends on which company or which fractional ownership you're doing. I can only speak for my own, but I'll give you my 2 cents worth. Because ours, up to this point, have all been self-managed as opposed to hiring an outside company, usually one of the owners oversees the day-to-day operations of the apartment, which aren't much. But when it comes to the syndic meetings or the co-propriétaire meetings, we arrange for one of my people in Paris to go. Now, if we get correspondence ahead of time, that comes to the managing member of the owners, one of which who is elected each year. So the 12 owners or the 10 owners or the 6 owners, whatever that may be, elect one person to act as their spokesman for a year. and that person is the managing representative for the owners. He is
okay.
the person that can speak at the Sandiq or arrange for a local person to speak on behalf of the partnership, and it is this person who also receives all of the correspondence from the Sandiq.
Okay, I understand. Okay, if I can have one more question.
Sure, shoot.
How do you go about selling your 1/12 ownership when that time comes?
You mean if you were to buy one, what would you do when you want to sell it?
Right.
Is that the question?
Yes.
Okay, does everybody understand that question? You know, if you were to own a ownership interest, how do you get rid of it? Hopefully you never want to, but should something arise where you do need to sell it, it is like selling a partnership interest in any other real estate entity, which is to say there isn't really an open market for these type of ownership interests yet. But I do see that a market will evolve as more and more, as fractional ownership becomes more and more popular. And I do see that as a trend that's going to be growing in the future. At the moment, the best answer I can give you is you would probably sell it the same way I'm selling and marketing the shares at this moment. And that is to say that there are certain internet venues that specialize in international real estate, which are very low cost, and for which you can get a lot of exposure on the internet for other people who might be interested in your share.
Okay.
I get a ton of traffic that way through, you know, like companies like Craigslist. There are a couple websites like Vivian is, a British site that specializes in international real estate. And, of course, Adrian Leeds does a lot of promotion for real estate in France. But all I can tell you is that the internet is a powerful, powerful tool for exposing something like this to a broad range of people. Who would
I understand. I just wanted to make sure there wasn't some legal issue or something, but that's fine.
No, so how do you go about selling it? Let's say you find a buyer and say, Steve, I got someone who wants to buy my share. In ours, and again, it's going to vary depending on the rules of whatever company you buy your share from, but in ours, we just have a simple first right of refusal among the existing members. So if Al wants to sell his share, and he finds a buyer willing to pay the price he's asking, then he just merely presents that to the other owners, and the owners have a limited period of time with which to match that offer on the same terms and conditions. And that way they have the same opportunity to buy an additional share as the new buyer would have to buy it from you directly. But that's the only limitation. Then changing the ownership in the LLC is very inexpensive. I'd say it's simply a matter of paperwork because nothing is truly recorded except with the French government. So perhaps less than $100.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hello.
Next question.
Hi.
Hello.
Bill Harvey.
Hi. Bill Harvey?
Yes. And the last comment actually begged one of my questions, and that is, who does the necessary filings in France, whether they're taxes or just reports, and who does the necessary filings for the LLC in the United States and then advise the members of the LLC what to report on their personal taxes?
Good question. And so this is a question about who's responsible for reporting requirements and filing a tax returns in the appropriate countries. With our first one, we had an LLC that took title. And so the only thing we needed to do was hire a CPA to prepare the Form 1065 for each of the members, which was done last year. We had budgeted for the cost of the CPA to do that work. And if you know anything about the IRS forms, all of the members receive their K-1s in time to file with their annual return. The good thing about our structures is that we absolutely prohibit rentals, which means that you can be assured that there's never any income on which tax would be liable, whether it's here in the United States or in France. So there's never a tax event, but there is always the reporting and filing requirement. So with the new one, because it's a slightly more complex structure, the way we do it, we have to file tax returns in both France and the United States. And I mentioned earlier in the conversation, I had met with my CPA this week, and we found a very good CPA who will be doing that for our next partner, all of our partnerships, actually. They will be handling all the reporting requirements as well as the filing of the annual return in France, and then we'll be arranging for the tax returns to be filed for the LLC as well in the United States. But the cost of doing that is part of the cost of running the partnership and the apartment, so it needs to be budgeted as part of the annual expenses that each owner would pay each year.
So, Steve, to follow up on the notion, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
To follow up on the comment you made about not being able to rent the time that your share of the time that you're there, does that apply to the corporation, or if I am a 112th owner and my month is September, and for some reason, I can't make it, then the apartment stays empty, and I can't personally then rent it to my neighbor here to go spend time in my month?
Okay, I'm having a little trouble. You're fading in and out a little bit, but let me see if I understand the question, and that is, maybe it's two-pronged. One is, if I have the month of September and I can't use all of it, can I rent it out to a friend or a neighbor, or what do I do with the time that I can't use?
Correct.
Okay, here's my explanation. One, there are different scenarios that each developer uses for how your time is initially allocated. I do it by calendar months. Other people do it by weeks. And I do it by rotation, which means every year you get a different month. Other people do it where you can buy a set week forever. You know, that may be the third week in March for the rest of your life, very similar to the way timeshares are done. And you may be able to buy multiple weeks, specifically the same week each and every year. Other people have other systems. But ultimately, the question boils down to, if I have some time and I cannot use it, what are my options?